Browns fans, don't miss A Legacy Unleashed at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, celebrating the greatest and most iconic moments in franchise history. For a limited time, now through April 21st, fans can immerse themselves in the Browns' rich history and get up close and personal with legends like Ozzie Newsome, Josh Cribbs, Bernie Kosar, Eric Metcalf, and many others. A Legacy Unleashed, for a limited time at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Get your tickets at profootballhof.com today.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into a Thursday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, a Hey Mary Kay edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. I'm Ashley Bastock here, of course, with Mary Kay Cabot as Dan finishes off his vacation week. He's going to try to do him proud here by asking these questions the way that Dan would. I think, what would Dan do? Mary Kay and I have joked, we need bracelets that say that sometimes, right? Like, we should have somebody make those.
Yes, we should. And now it's so funny because we associate Dan with Ken. And yes, for some reason, we just want to say Dan Nuff instead of Ken Nuff. And we want to see Dan in that fur coat. We want to see the headband. So we've been having a lot of fun with that. But yeah, we have muddled through this week somehow without Dan, and we can't wait for him to come back.
Yeah, Dan is more than Dan enough when it comes to producing these podcasts and hosting them. But I want to start off with Mary Kay, kind of along the line of what we were talking about yesterday a little bit with an extension for Amari Cooper. This question comes from Doug in Levittown, PA. He asked about the Amari Cooper extension, which, Doug, we did talk about in detail what Andrew Berry said about that on the Wednesday pod that came out late Wednesday night. So you can go hear a lengthier conversation about that there. But he also wondered, was there any kind of update about Nick Chubb's contract from this past week?
There was an update about Nick Chubb and his contract, and it goes hand in hand with his recovery. Until you know what he's going to be able to do this season, you can't really rework the contract, right? That has to go along with, do you think he's going to play 8 games, 10 games, 11 games, whatever the case may be. So I think they have to give it a little breathing room. And as Andrew said yesterday or the other day when we talked to him, that over the next 3 months, they'll have a much better idea of what Nick is going to be capable of. And once they know that, then they can sit down and hammer something out that works nicely for both sides.
I think I saw that quote from Andrew where he basically reiterated what he said at a season wrap-up press conference with you guys this week. And it sounded like he once again stated, made it very clear that no one wants that carry in Pittsburgh to be the last time people see Nick Chubb in a Cleveland Browns uniform. Do you think that it's very meaningful when he reiterates something like that again, Mary Kay?
I do. I really do. They understand the power and the impact of Nick Chubb. And I know it's like this for you, Ashley, when you're out and about in the community and when I'm out and about in the community. Fans love Nick Chubb. So many people that I know, that's the jersey that they have, that they have always wanted, that they're proud to wear. And the Browns understand just what Nick Chubb means to this football team. And so they're going to do right by Nick Chubb somehow, some way. There are some things that transcend money. Even if they have to spend more money than they normally would for a running back who you just don't know exactly where that's going to go this year, even if they have to throw some many more millions of dollars at it, they're going to do that. Now, of course, they're a business, so they're not going to go crazy, but they will do right by Nick Chubb, and that is exactly how it should be because they know the backlash they would get. They know the uprising there would be if they didn't do right by Nick Chubb. We just saw the impact that he had when he donned the Batman mask and smashed the guitar before the playoff clinching Jets game. So I think that kind of says it all right there. They know what they have to do.
Yeah, I do think he just is one of those players. And I think you could argue the Browns have two of those guys in Myles Garrett and Nick Chubb. But I do, in my mind, Nick is almost top dog in terms of having woven himself just into the fabric of the city the way he has, effortlessly into the team. And we've talked about this before, but it's this idea of the Browns had so many injuries last year. And I mean, we've seen so many injuries, season-ending injuries, the last couple of years. No locker room ever reacted the way that this locker room reacted when Nick Chubb got hurt. And the way guys were talking, and of course, famously, Mary Kay, that was after the game, Greg Newsome told you, we're dedicating our season to Nick Chubb. And they didn't dedicate their season to Jack Conklin or to Deshaun Watson. And that's not a knock on those guys. It's more speaking to how special Nick Chubb is.
Yeah. In fact, we even asked after Deshaun went down, I think we asked Anthony Walker, it was, if they are also going to co-dedicate the season to him. And he said no. He basically said no. There's one Nick Chubb. There's one player that we have dedicated this season to. And end of story there. So I thought that was very, very telling, because those players really do really like Deshaun Watson a lot too. But it just hasn't risen to the Nick Chubb level at this point.
I wanted to stick with the running backs here, because we got a conversation from Mike Parker in Chester, Maryland, who he joked that he's kind of inundated with Ravens news and highlights, something we can understand. But I think his question, his point, speaks to something bigger we've talked about. We talked about it yesterday with the moves that the Browns have made in the running back room, not necessarily being a sign that they're not confident in Nick Chubb. It's more about adding other things like that Kareem Hunt did, for example, in Deontay Foreman and that sort of stuff. But he asked, why wouldn't the Browns want to pursue free agent J.K. Dobbins? Because he's looked good when he's healthy, but knowing Nick Chubb and his status on top of that, why wouldn't that be more ideal? And for me, it just seems like this all goes back to, this isn't a position they're going to go back up the Brinks truck for, to bring somebody new in, when they do already have a number one guy in Nick Chubb.
They do. And I think it speaks to the fact that they really believe that he will be back at some point this season. And I think they want to show the faith and confidence in him. And if they went out and signed another sort of number one back, I think that it would send a message to the fans and to Nick that perhaps they aren't as confident in his healthy return. And I don't think they want to do that. But by the same token, they did so last year and they will do so again this year. They will get the running game accomplished without Nick Chubb if they have to for a period of time. And they did it last year by committee. They did it with Jerome Ford, Kareem Hunt, and Pierre Strong. They don't have Kareem Hunt anymore, but now they have Donta Foreman replacing him. They still have Jerome and they still have Pierre Strong. And as we talked about yesterday a little bit, we know now that they also have Deuce Staley, who's bringing some new juice to the running back room. And they have a new running game coordinator. And I just think that they feel really good about their ability to run the football until Nick comes back.
All right, let's take it more broadly with the roster construction, because our friend Mavro in Columbus asked, hey, Mary Kay, do you see the Browns signing any more free agents before OTAs, or do you think they're more likely to wait this cycle out, maybe bring some more big names in once we get into training camp?
I don't know if there are going to be any more big names per se. I think right now the focus is on the NFL draft, and I've got to get my little draft game face on here too coming up. I mean, it's going to be here before we know it. You get so tied up and so busy with, you know, the Super Bowl and the combine and free agency and then the owners meetings, and all of a sudden you wake up and it's like, oh, it's April, it's time for the NFL draft, right? So I know you've been doing a lot of mock roundups and things like that, but we're gonna have to ratchet up our due diligence on the draft here coming up very soon. But I don't think there are going to be very many big names. I think there will be some smaller role players coming in, perhaps. Not too many before the draft. I think they will revisit it after the draft to see if they have any holes that they still need to fill.
And we had another question regarding the quarterback room, and we've talked about this a little bit already. This one comes from Dave Burns in Richmond, Virginia, who said, "Hey, Mary Kay, do you think the Browns will keep all four quarterbacks they currently have on their roster, and how might that impact things?"
I think they will for a while. I don't think they will once they get to the season. I think by that point, somebody will have to go one way or the other, or somebody will land on the practice squad or something along those lines. So they could still have four around, but they're not going to keep four on the active roster. Not even 100% certain they'll keep three on the active roster.
Yeah.
These are some These are some decisions that they will have to make coming up. If they feel good enough about what they have in their one and their two, in Deshaun and Jameis, there's a chance that, I mean, who knows how that goes in terms of the active roster. So these are decisions yet to be made. I know they don't want to lose Dorian Thompson-Robinson, so you don't necessarily want to expose him to waivers or expose him to the practice squad. So decisions to be made coming up in the quarterback room.
That was the first thing I thought of when I saw this question, because last year when the third emergency quote unquote QB thing became a rule, I remember we got Andrew Berry like right around that time. I can't remember if it was around the Joshua Dobbs trade. It was somewhere in training camp ish. And he was just very hesitant to commit to using it. And I do think the game day roster, ultimately, they so value those spots. They just seemed very hesitant to devote one to a third quarterback, really, for most of the season.
Right. And I think that it will be more of the same in that regard. I think that a lot of teams do it that way. And I think they'll feel pretty good about going into games with Deshaun and Jameis active and then kind of make their decisions from there, based on what they can and can't get away with in terms of being able to keep whoever else they want to keep. And we know they feel really good about DTR as a developmental young quarterback, so they have to keep that in mind.
All right, we did actually get one draft question, Mary Kay, from Abe in Huntington, West Virginia. And I wanted to ask it because I do have an opinion on this. I'm curious if you agree with me or not. But he said, "It might be too early for a draft question." It's not. As we've said, we are woefully behind, and I think this is what happens when your team doesn't have a first-round pick. It just gets more's up in the air, more's left up to chance when you're covering the draft. But Abe wants to know, do you believe the Browns will move up in the draft considering their limited picks in 2024? I think they're more likely, and I see now this was actually the second part of Abe's question, they're more likely, I think, to trade down if they're going to trade. And I say that just because we've seen Andrew Berry do it the last 2 years. He even joked about it at the combine. I don't know if he said anything else about that this week, Mary Kay, if you have any more insight, but that quote has just stuck with me. It's hard to keep money in my pocket.
Yes, that was funny. You know, I honestly don't think that he goes into it with a set of rules in terms of I'm not trading up, I'm trading back, I'm doing one thing or the other. I think they like to get into the draft, see how the board falls. And if they have an opportunity to go up and grab a player that maybe dropped out of the first round that they really love, then they will try to trade up for that player. And they will use their draft picks as currency in which to do that. So I wouldn't rule that out. I wouldn't rule out staying right put there at 54. I wouldn't rule out trading back and trying to pick up something in the fourth round. Any one of those things can happen, and it is all dictated by the opportunities that present themselves on draft day. So even Andrew can't predict at this point what he will do.
Yeah, I think the prime example of this for me is 2021 when they traded up to get JOK. I think from what I remember about that time, and I wasn't covering them yet, but it seemed like they had obviously pegged JOK as this round one talent. And when he didn't go, they were like, oh my gosh, how can we trade up to make sure we get this guy? Because we like him that much, because it seemed like they were really between him and Greg Newsome for that first round pick even.
Yes. And that was an opportunity that presented itself. They were overjoyed to be able to get him where they did in the second round and to be able to move up and get him there. So if something like that happens again, they won't hesitate to pull the trigger on that again. and they can find a way to do it. You don't even just have to use this year's picks. You can use some of next year's picks to go ahead and move up in the draft. And the fact that they don't have anything until 54, I mean, you just never know. There's enough good receivers in this draft. There are enough good players at other positions that somebody that they value as a first rounder could just start to fall to them, and they will pounce on that. So I think we just need to be ready for anything.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got some more questions about the defense, question about the stadium even. So we'll hit those once we come back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to this Thursday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, a Hey Mary Kay episode. I'm Ashley Bastock, here, of course, with the namesake, Hey Mary, Mary Kay Cabot. As I said, hey, in front of her name. Close joke, when people say Hey Mary Kay, even if it's just to get her attention, you have to ask a football question if you're going to say Hey Mary Kay.
Yes, it's funny. I get that when I'm out sometimes, Hey Mary Kay, you know, on a boarding a plane or at baggage or just walking around in Orlando or something like that. So it is kind of funny. It has stuck.
All right. Well, this question is about the Browns defense. It's something we've talked about, I think, quite extensively, especially as the season was going on, but we can reflect a little bit more. It's from Carlasso in Plymouth, Massachusetts. He says, hey, Mary Kay, last season, the defense seemed to have a split personality, great at home and not so much on the road. How do the offseason moves figure to impact that discrepancy? And he says, of course, this implies that is the discrepancy at all in the first place.
Well, I've written about this and mentioned it a number of times, and that is the fact that I attributed the home and road disparity to the fact that they played some lesser quarterbacks at home and they played some tougher quarterbacks on the road. And I think that will bear out this season. They've got some really tough quarterbacks coming into Cleveland Brown Stadium. I think it's going to be tougher for them at home this year than it was last year by far. You've got Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of these other really good top-notch quarterbacks coming in here. You'll have Joe Burrow coming in here healthy, presumably, and not just on one leg like he was last year when they played him. So I think that it's going to be a lot tougher. And that's exactly why I kept advocating over and over that they needed to add to the defense, that they needed to really add to the defensive line in particular. And they feel so good about their defense that they didn't really upgrade it very much per se. And it's also not like the other side of the ball where you've got some really key guys coming back from injuries. There were no really huge injuries. I mean, they got away with keeping Miles healthy and keeping Denzel healthy and keeping most of their guys pretty healthy for most of the season, Z, and, you know, it goes on and on. So I still think that they could have done a little bit more. We will find out. Maybe they have big plans for Siaki Ika. Maybe they've got big plans for some of the other young defensive linemen that they have on this roster. But I feel because of what they have coming at home with these quarterbacks that they could have bolstered that defensive line just a little bit more.
Yeah, I was going to bring that point up. That to me is definitely what I remember thinking, even in real time, that this is the disparity. It's when you were going against these savvier, especially veteran quarterbacks. I think it was really evident when they lost to the Broncos and they lost to the Rams, especially. And look at everything with Russell Wilson and how it transpired there. And he was still able to do what he was against that defense. So I think that's almost why we've been on this podcast, especially, I don't want to say sounding the warning bells, but just bringing up that they didn't make a super splashy move. I mean, I guess their splashiest move was re-signing Za'Darius Smith, and I think that's fine. But I just think the nature of the NFL is teams figure you out. So without a bunch of new personnel in there, which a lot of guys overperformed in this scheme last year. I think that's great. But you can't run it back the exact same way. It's just not going to work. Offenses will start to torch you.
Well, they have to hope that they get a little bit more out of Z than they got out of him last year. And then also they can't really afford to have Miles slumping at the end of the season like he did last year. And I say that because he basically said that too. And not that he was mired in some horrible slump, because he's Miles Garrett. He's the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. But even he noted that he wasn't making those game-changing plays down the stretch and in the playoffs. And that's what you need. So they need him to finish strong. They need Z to be more consistent and strong throughout. And then I think if Oboe stays healthy, I think they can get some more out of him. And they added Quentin Jefferson on the inside, and they've got Mo and Shelby back in there. So they've got a good defensive line. I'm not saying that. I just really felt that they needed another almost double-digit sacker. I think they need someone who can get 9 sacks for you, or 9.5 sacks, or whatever the case may be. And if you look at the statistics, drives really do get wrecked when there is a sack involved. So I think sacks matter a little bit more than the Browns led us to believe last year, or would have had us believe. I think they're vitally important. I think they ruin things. I think it is why Jim Schwartz chewed out his defense for going 2 weeks, his defensive line for going 2 weeks without one. So again, I would have liked to have seen another double-digit sacker join the football team, whether from an interior position or from an edge rush standpoint. It doesn't mean, however, that they don't have that guy in the building and on the roster right now. They just need to get it out of him. And we do know that they have a new defensive line coach. So there will be a new energy on that side of the ball and at that position as well.
I wanted to go to this question next, since we brought up, you know, one of those younger guys like Siaki Ika, maybe his role will increase and he has something to contribute that we are not accounting for when we talk about them running it back. But we got this question here from Jay Travers in Minneapolis, who talks about this story on The Athletic that I just pulled up, where they graded every NFL team's draft choices from the last year, and they gave the Browns a D and wondered if we agreed with that. And my first thought, and I read the story, I read the little snippet that they said, and they mentioned Cedric Tillman. I believe they mentioned Siaki as well. My first thought is it's a letter grade too low. And I think the guy carrying most of that weight, of course, is DeJuan Jones. But I think getting DeJuan where they did, I'd give them at least a C+ for that draft. D is just too low for me.
Well, I'll tell you what. You have to take into account that they didn't have a pick until the third round. You cannot grade that draft the way, you know, the way that you can someone that was able to go out there and draft CJ Stroud. You just can't do it. So no, you can't give that draft a D. Right. And plus, what they do with a lot of their later round picks is they are such a veteran team right now, poised to win, that they're drafting for the future. So some of these guys are not supposed to see the field in their first season, or very much in their first season, or maybe even not a ton in their second season in some cases. So I don't think that you can give it a D. As you mentioned, DeJuan Jones, that was a home run. He played in many respects like a first rounder last year. He really did. He played like the first rounder people originally thought he was going to be. It's unbelievable to me that he slipped to the fourth round. The Browns got such a bargain there, such a steal there. And he could be, who knows, their starting left tackle of the future. If not, he's one of them. He's the right or the left. He's a starter. He's only going to get better. And just from that pick alone, you can't give this a D. There's just no way. So I would probably go more B-, knowing that it's really incomplete right now. We don't know what Siaki is going to be able to do. We don't know what Sed is going to do yet. And we already know that DeJuan has overachieved.
Yeah, it's just so hard, I think, to have those grades and grade teams against one another, basically, when the Browns are starting at the third round. And most teams have first round picks last year that you're giving grades to. So I 100% agree. For me, C+ is the floor. And I think DeJuan can do most of the heavy lifting there in terms of raising that grade up, because it really is a miracle. I think a minor miracle that he turned into what he did, because I never would have thought that when he was getting sick on the sidelines at rookie minicamp and Bill Callahan was yelling at him. But he just really turned that corner when he played every single snap in that Hall of Fame game, and can't say enough about him.
I mean, that is so true. And not only that, when you think about it, there are a lot of times a team will try to draft a left tackle in the first round. And some people would argue that it happened this way with the Browns when they drafted Jed Wills Jr. I don't think Jed is a bust. I think Jed has taken steps up every single year, and he's going to continue to get better. But there are plenty of teams that draft offensive linemen, left tackle, right tackle, whatever the case may be, in the first round of the draft, and they don't work out at all. And so for the Browns, just to be able to get DeJuan, who is probably going to be a Pro Bowl offensive tackle for them down the road, I think that alone brings you up into the something B category, because anything else after that is almost just a bonus.
All right, couple more here. We got this one from the 802 area code, and I know we've been talking about this actually this morning. I know our Lance Reisland is very excited to break down all the changes to kickoffs in the NFL, but Mary Kay, this person writes basically wanting to know, have we heard anything yet from the Browns about their opinions on this? Did Andrew Berry talk about this after this resolution passed this week?
No, we didn't get a chance to talk to anybody after it passed, but I think if it all works out well, we should have an opportunity to talk to special teams coordinator Bubba Ventrone next week. I put in the request for the group for him to do either a Zoom with us, or maybe we even go out to Berea. Maybe he could even put some things on film for us. I'm calling him out right now. That's what we want you to do, Bubba.
Yes.
But and he would probably love to do it. He loves to do that kind of stuff. So I think he would really enjoy that. And I think it's going to be fun to hear about this, because yeah, I'm kind of getting excited about this
Me
new
too.
Play.
Yeah.
I've watched it, right? I mean, I'm sure you have too. I've watched it. I've seen how it's going to work, and it's going to be an actual fun football play, something that should be exciting, something that's going to take some strategy, some thought, and some personnel. And you're going to see teams trying to acquire a player for that role. And I think that's kind of cool too. I mean, it's just going to bring back the kick returner and put them back on the map. Who knows? Josh Cribbs, he might just suit back up.
Come out of retirement, yeah.
Get on out there. But no, I think it's going to be fun. I think it's, again, in addition to cutting down on the injury factor, it should be an opportunity to score some points. It'll be an opportunity to change the strategy. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a little jolt for the game for 2024.
Yeah, Bubba Ventrone is like the number one guy I think I want to hear talking about this. He was animated even last year talking about when there were much more minor changes made to kickoffs, and he's not afraid to state his opinion about these things. And the Browns were not one of the teams that proposed this, but yeah, my first thought was this is just going to be exciting. And I know Lance mentioned this, and for me, after reading through it and watching some of the models they have and the diagrams, what's so interesting is this idea that now the play is going to begin when the returner has the ball. So the guys don't get a head start running. So that's also how they're planning on cutting down on injuries, taking care of that issue. But that just sounds so exciting. I can visualize that.
Well, not only that, when you have a team that really puts a lot of emphasis into special teams, this could be dynamite. It really could. We know how into it Bubba Ventrone is. And the Browns, same thing. They really put a lot of thought and effort into special teams. That's why they had to go cutting Cade York last year. You know, they know that the kicking game is vitally important for them. And I think they have the right guy to get this right. Of course, Bubba Ventrone was a special teams ace for the Cleveland Browns back in the day. So he comes in with all that energy and all that passion for special teams and for Cleveland. And I think he's going to have so much fun with this. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. I mean, this is like a special teams coordinator's Christmas Day or Super Bowl, right? To be able to get something like this to think about, to talk about, to get up on the whiteboard about, to get film out about. And so I think it's going to be really cool.
All right, let's finish up here with our friend Paxton Stiles from Chevrolet Maryland. He wants to know, he says, hey, Mary Kay and Ashley, I appreciate the shout out there. He's going to be heading to Cleveland next weekend ahead of the Eclipse, ahead of the women's Final Four here. It's, of course, going to be a very exciting few days. But he wants to know if we have any new dinner and drink recommendations.
Well, I love that question. We are foodies. And we do really enjoy trying new things here in Cleveland. And one that I know you've been there several times, Ashley, and some of the females who cover the Browns together, we all went there one night and really enjoyed our time at Amba, which is in the, what would you call that, Hingetown?
Yeah, I'd call it Hingetown. Hingetown, Ohio City.
Okay, so it's in the Hingetown, Ohio City area. And it's called Amba, A-M-B, is it A-H or A?
Just A.
Amba. And it's a lot of small plates. And it's, is it Indian?
It's Indian it's infusion. Indian. Yeah.
Okay. And it's really,
so good.
Really good. And it's a great concept and a cool atmosphere. So that's one of our spots. What else do you have, Ashley?
So much. I was just going to add so much variety there. I think, too, what a lot of people should like about it is they have a bunch of vegetarian options, a bunch of vegan options. Like if you want something a bit healthier, but if you want to, you know, also splurge on some heavier items, they have that. So that's definitely one of mine. I also was going to recommend, because I don't remember the last time we did an AMA, but this place has opened within the last year, and it's Dracy's Slice Shop, which is right by Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. I wanted to bring that up because it's a really cool atmosphere, the way they've decked out everything. It has kind of a 70s vibe. They have a lot of antiques, the way they've decorated it. Very old school, and you can get a whole pizza, you can get great appetizers, you can get just a slice. They even have a little walk-up window on the sidewalk that you can order a slice to go. So it's very, very New York in that way. But that was one of my new-ish recommendations. And Travis Kelce, I think, was just there when he was in town.
And then one place that we all went recently over the last how many ever months was Fahrenheit downtown. Yes. And that is the great Rocco Whalen. And you absolutely have got to duck your head into Fahrenheit and experience that wonderful food and wonderful atmosphere there right downtown. And then I haven't been here yet myself, but I've heard really good things about Agave and Rye on West 6th. Have you been there actually?
Mm-mm.
We need to try it. It's the taco place on West 6th. So I've heard it's really, really good. So that's something that I would recommend.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anywhere else. I know another small place on East 4th is Cordelia's. That's a bit more farm to table. Then their menu changes also. So I'm not even sure what they have right now, but that's part of the fun of going there. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else like brand new that I've been really fixating on. And I think Amba's the big thing. Go to Amba while you're here, Paxton. That's what we have to say. Go to Amba.
Yeah. And then there's the, you know, the tried and true stuff on West 25th Street. So you've got a number of really cool places. You know, you've got Town Hall and Pioneers over there and Brightside and Market Garden Brewery.
Brightside's really good. Brightside's been totally reimagined. That used to be Bar Cento. The food is amazing there.
Yeah, so there's so many good places. I mean, one of my more upscale fave places to go is Luca on the Viaduct. I don't know if you've ever been there, Ashley. If you haven't.
I'm actually going there next Friday for my friend's rehearsal dinner.
There you go. Well, you will love.
I'm in another wedding.
Oh, my gosh, Ashley. That's a whole podcast. We are going to do... The 27 dresses podcast.
I know.
Shouldn't we do that?
Can you believe I'm in? So my friend who's getting married, I have to shout her out, Missy. We played basketball together at John Carroll, and Missy was amazing. I was actually behind Missy for my entire time playing because she was an All-American. She was the all-time leading scorer for a while. She was up for the Division III Player of the Year our last year that we played. And I just think it's so funny that she's getting married during the Women's Final Four. It's like she was my friend who was the best at basketball and just had no idea. But she managed to even get a block of hotel rooms booked. I mean, that is wizardry with everything going on next weekend down here.
Wow, that is amazing. That's amazing. Oh, and we should shout out Dan because Dan our own Dan.
Yes.
Lobby is going to be covering the women's final four. Ashley can't do it because she's, are you going to a wedding or in a wedding? What are you doing?
I'm in the wedding. I'm a bridesmaid. Yes. I am a bridesmaid so once again.
Okay. Yes. So Ashley can't cover it, obviously, because she's in the wedding. But Dan's going to be covering it. So everybody read Dan's women's final four coverage. That's an exciting event coming to town. And everybody coming to town for that is going to find out that we are quite the food town, right?
Yeah.
Everybody coming for that and for the eclipse.
You cannot underestimate how many people are going to be here from the eclipse. The videos I keep seeing on TikTok from what happened the last eclipse 6 years ago or whenever that was. I don't even think it was that long ago. But I think we're going to have so many tourists here. A lot of people are going to end up being shocked that this many people travel for an event like this, but it's so rare. It's not surprising.
Yes. I'm wondering how it's all going to work out from a traffic and a logistics standpoint. It's going to be really interesting to see how that all goes. But yes, one of these days we will do the 27 dresses podcast and have a little bit of fun with that for Ashley, who is, how many is this now, Ashley?
This is my eighth. And then I'm the maid of honor for my cousin in May. It's actually, her wedding is actually, God love her. It's the weekend after, like, the second weekend that they can have rookie mini camp. Because we all know there's two weekends you can have rookie mini camp. It's either the weekend right after the draft or the weekend after that. So her wedding is May 18th, and that'll be my ninth. And because I think it's pretty rare. I'm still friends with all of my friends that I was in their weddings. I've not had any falling outs with any of them. So once again, just, it's really impressive, I think, for myself at this point.
That is impressive. I'm very impressed by that. And when we do the podcast, I really do want you to maybe not model the dresses, but certainly show off all of the dresses, and we can do a little video with it, because this is I think it's a sequel in the making.
Yeah, we could have our listeners rate the dresses in terms of which one is the most wearable, which one is not so flattering. And yeah, I won't model them necessarily, but I definitely have all of them. They're in different locations. Some are at my mom's house, some are here, some are in the basement, some are in a coat closet, but they all exist still. So we definitely should do that.
Have you worn any of them again?
Actually, this is very fascinating. The last wedding I was in, we didn't have specific dresses that we had to buy. My friend Marissa just wanted us to go with a neutral slash like gold kind of color palette. So I was like, oh, okay, I found a dress I liked. It was from the shop Show Me Your Moo Moo, which they do a lot of bridesmaid dresses, and picked it out, really liked the color, thought it was a really great dress. And my friend Missy, who's getting married next week, she said, hey, I think we're going to do our bridesmaids dresses from Show Me Your Moo Moo. It just has to be in this champagne luxe satin. And I said, shut the front door. That is the exact color dress that I have. And I asked her, I'm like, hey, I just wore this dress for another wedding. I still have it. It still fits. Can I just wear this? She said, go for it. So I'm going to be wearing I get two uses out of this bridesmaid's dress. I think that's an amazing. My luck on this is so amazing. I can't believe it.
That's incredible.
Right?
Very, very, very impressive. I think it's a good sign. I think it's a sign of something.
Yo, I don't know what, but we'll see.
Yes.
All right. Well, until then, Mary Kay and I think we will be back tomorrow with another pod before Dan, our last Danless pod. But until then, check out all our coverage at cleveland.com/Browns. Again, Mary Kay wrote a lot about the owners' meetings. I think she still has some stuff potentially coming from there. She got a lot out of those couple days in Orlando, so check that all out there. Check out our videos, our YouTube channel, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com over at YouTube. And again, we are on Instagram now, so go search Orange and Brown Talk over there. So, all right, Mary Kay, I will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great.